I'm speaking today with Harris County Commissioner Sylvia Garcia, who represents Precinct 2. Commissioner Garcia, you were first elected to this office in 2002. You're now serving, you're completing the end of your second term. What would you say, looking at the almost 8 years now you've been in this office, what would you say are the things that you call your top accomplishments that you're most proud of?
Well, I think reflecting back to 2002, I think the thing that we've done the most that's been important to the entire area is just really just bringing all the communities together. When you represent an area as large as we do in Harris County government with almost 1 million people, my area includes 14 cities and about 8 to 10 communities that have their own distinct needs in the unincorporated areas. It's difficult to balance all the competing interests. When you look at the North Channel area, that is very different than the Bay Area that includes NASA and all the small Bay Area cities. Then if you look at the industry and all the petrochemical complex and the Port of Houston, that's still yet another very distinct set of people and economic interests. Then you look inside the loop, and that's totally different. So for me, the first task was really just bringing all the communities together so that all the chambers would work together, so that all our economic development groups were on the same page, and that we were all looking at going in the right direction for East Harris County.
And your predecessor in this office served for, 30 years, Jim Fontana?
He served for 28 years, and he left a very strong legacy, particularly prior to all the programs. There really were investments in human capital. I mean, obviously he did a lot of road bridge projects and built a lot of community centers and started a lot of parks. But I think his real legacy will be in the senior program that he started in the youth program, and we've added to that the veterans program that we also continue, and now a hunger program. Again, the things that are needed to assist families, particularly working families who are struggling today, so they can have a better quality of life.
Okay. Now, Harris County, of course, is now facing a fairly tight budget, as is the case everywhere else around the country. What is being done in Commissioner's Court by you to deal with that, and how are you dealing with it?
Well, I think the good news is that the court has worked real hard to plan ahead, to cut costs, to do the things necessary to avoid any tax increases, to do all the things necessary to avoid any major layoffs. And even despite this troubling economic times, I mean, we are pleased as anything that all three rating agencies have given us the highest credit rating available to local governments. We're probably one of a handful, I would guess, local governments that have AAA credit rating from all three rating agencies. That's not saying that we have money. It just says that what we have we're managing well, and that we're planning, and that we're keeping a good ratio of expenses versus revenues. So we're real pleased with that. These are tough times. We've been on a hiring freeze. We've been on a travel freeze. We've been on a no more benefits freeze, no promotions. And we started that, in the precinct, the first of this year, even before the county adopted a full freeze across the board. We're still on a hiring freeze. I suspect that we'll probably continue to the end of the year until we see the tax revenues come in January. So, we're all hurting a bit. For me, in my own precinct, we're down about almost 50 employees, positions that we've not been able to fill. I mean, even when someone just resigns or takes another job, I mean, we cannot fill that spot. Everybody from one of my camps to, positions in the courts, the sheriff's department, everybody's getting hit. But it's what we have to do to make sure that the budget is balanced and that we don't have to raise taxes.
Okay. The sheriff's department and, criminal justice in general in Harris County is a big portion of the budget. The sheriff has been working to reduce the jail population, which, is a big expenditure. Can you evaluate, the progress that's been made and where you think more things need to be done to, rein in or reduce or control the prison population and the related costs in Harris County?
Well, you're absolutely correct. The criminal justice, the courts, the constables, the sheriff, the judges, all of it together eats up almost one half of our general fund budget, which is huge because a lot of it is personnel driven. I mean, if there you don't see any big frills there. It's very personnel intensive, and it's a lot of different pieces. It's very complicated when you look at, if you track a case from the very beginning when it's when someone's picked up at arrest, and you go through final disposition, probably anywhere from 7 to 8 different departments touch that individual, whether it's the sheriff at booking, whether it's the judge later that hears them, probation department who deals with them, the mental health department if they have to work with any mental health issues related to that inmate. You've got, you know, medical issues. You've got, you know, potentially some vocational, you know, education issues. I mean, it's so many people that are involved that it's going to not be an overnight solution. I think we're taking a lot of good steps that are important, and some of which come from the sheriff directly in terms of his handling of the jail population. But people need to remember, he's the custodian. You know, he opens the door. He doesn't control who gets in that door. You know, every law enforcement agency sends some folks, the judges, you know, the people that they're involved with all the criminal justice system. So we all have to work together. We started by forming a Harris County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, which is where all the elected officials that are involved in criminal justice issues, plus myself and Commissioner Lee, two commissioners. And we sit around the table, principals, people who are at the top that make the decisions. And we've made a lot of progress. We've started working on the public defender's office. That's probably our first major success story. We've been able to get the $4.1 million in a state grant for a pilot project for a public defender. Just a couple of weeks ago, we appointed the community advisory board that will work together with the chief public defender. Their first task will be to hire the chief public defender and then work with the chief public defender to put the office in shape, organize it, hire the people, and hopefully start at the beginning of our pilot project as early as January of next year. That's huge for our county. It's a major milestone, in my view, long overdue. But it's good to see that the fruits of all that labor, because we've been working on it for about a year, have come and that we're ready to start. We've also worked with the sheriff on some alternative sentencing issues, particularly the 3-for-1 credit, which he's now adopted and has started and is working on. It took him a while. Some of us got a little impatient, a little frustrated. But when you didn't have it in place, you've got to develop a system, particularly with a population as large as ours, to keep track of the inmates and know which ones are eligible and when they'll be eligible. He's also working at looking at the possibility of the leg monitors. He's looking at, you know, a lot of work programs. So I think it's important to recognize that sheriff can't do it alone. He needs the support of the court in terms of the budget issues, but he also needs the support of the judges, he needs the support of probation, the bonds people, everybody, because this is not a one person only kind of challenge. It's the whole system. And it's been the way it is for a very long time, so it's going to take some time.
And of course, tied up in this is the fact that a lot of people who interact with the criminal justice system in Harris County are people with mental health issues. It's been said that Harris County Jail is basically the largest mental health care facility in the area, if not the state. Of course, with the state having budget issues, funding for that is going to be cut back as well. How do you deal with that in a way that, you know, it still enables the county to provide care for people who need it and for whom it's often cheaper to provide care for rather than lock them up? But within how do you deal with that within the current budget reality?
Well, for us in Harris County, I mean, I can tell you that we were successful last time in working together with a coalition of advocates to secure additional funding for mental health care. And I think our numbers were something in terms of $20 million. Now, whether we'll succeed in just maintaining that level or whether we'll succeed in getting more dollars remains to be seen. I don't really know right now what legislative priorities will be. I do know that a lot of it will probably take a back seat to meeting their budget deficit first. So we'll just have to deal with it when it comes. And it's too early for me to really frankly speculate. All I can tell you is that we're doing everything we can locally to maximize the use of our current tax dollars. And I know that the mental health folks have looked at everything from, you know, the sheriff hiring his own staff to deal with that rather than looking at and working with the mental health authority and also looking at different ways that we can provide the service. The key is for all this is intake. We have to be able to identify these individuals up front and start providing the care and then work with a community organization that can provide continuing care after they leave our facility. Because what happens is they get treatment when they're with us, but once they have disposition of their case and get bonded out or whatever the case may be, they go back in the community, they don't get receive the services, so they end up coming right back to the system. So we need to look at continuity of care after they get through with us, and that's the bigger challenge.
Okay. And the Public Defender's Office that, as you say, Canada recently got a grant for, what is your vision for this? What do you want to see this do once it's fully formed?
I think ultimately, you know, within 5 to 10 years, you know, what I'd like to see is just a agency that will help all people who cannot afford a lawyer to be able to secure one. In all cases, at all levels, in all courts. And it needs to be one that is essentially has parity, if you will, with the district attorney's office. Every public defender that's been there for 3 years should make as much money or as little, depending on the case, your point of view, as a 2 or 3 year, you know, district attorney. They should be given the same resources, the same, pay and all the same benefits as the district attorney's office. So I think we need to work toward making sure we have a complete, full delivery of services for indigent defendants.
Okay. Precinct you represent, as you mentioned in your initial answer, includes the Ship Channel and some places like Pasadena, so a lot of the parts of town that include refineries and chemical plants and whatnot. All that's been in the news lately with issues of the TCEQ and the EPA and permitting and whether they're meeting clean air regulations or not. What's your view on this? Do you believe that the state has done an adequate job in enforcing clean air regulations? Do you believe the federal government needs to have more oversight? What's your view on this?
Well, for us, I think it starts with our own the Harris County Air Pollution Control Division, which is part of our, public health department. I mean, they are the only group in town that really deals with enforcement issues. And I can tell you that they're aggressive. I see things come across my desk all the time with, asking for court authorization to proceed with a lawsuit or proceed with the compliance action against a number of facilities. And they're really not all in the petrochemical industry. I mean, polluters are more than just air. I mean, we've got a lot of folks that are putting all kinds of literally junk into our waters that impact our water quality. We've got a lot of people who are pouring, oil in drainage areas because they don't want to dispose of it properly. And it's all kinds of things. And for me, it's about making sure that we cover all bases. And For us in East Harris County, it's also been about cleaning the Sedgeson and waste pits to make sure it's a Superfund site, to make sure we get EPA involved and working with us to make sure we can clean up that area. And ultimately, I think it's really more in the hands of the state, in my view, than it is in terms of the federal government, because the state needs to be a little more aggressive in helping the local jurisdictions with some of their enforcement, because they're the ones that hold permit. I mean, they've got the big stick. So more needs to be done at that level, and certainly as I look towards the next legislative session, we'll be working together with a couple of members of the State House that will be looking at making it a little bit tighter coming out of the state.
Okay. County commissioners, one of the jobs you guys have has, you know, roads, toll roads, and other mobility issues. You are on the Houston Galveston Area Council, which also, you know, does a lot of planning in terms of transportation. What are the transportation needs in your precinct, and where do you see, you know, the big things coming from?
Well, yeah, you probably don't even have time to list all of it, but interestingly,
well, give me the Reader's Digest first.
Yeah, we had a HTAC board meeting this morning. In fact, that we okayed the consultant that's going to look into the new 2040 master plan. I think it was called Direction for Connection or something, but here already we're looking at revising the master plan to put us to 2040. For us, it's really been all about access in terms of people outside the loop. There is no metro service outside the loop except for the transit dollars that I've succeeded in securing directly from the feds to do a couple of initiatives. We started a park and ride in Baytown that comes in and connects to the Maxie Road park and ride that's metro, and then it comes in to the Central Business District of Houston. Same for Pasadena. We have a park and ride there now that begins there and feeds into the Gulf Gate park and ride and comes into the Central Business District of Houston. We have a circulator in Baytown and one in Pasadena just to get people around. It's not, you know, a full bus service. It's really designed to get people to work, particularly those who work in the Central Business District, and students to college, because we work with Lee College in Baytown and San Jacinto College in Pasadena. So those are some of the initiatives that we've begun. And in fact, you know, if I had to list another thing that I think has been a major accomplishment, it's been that, just providing some ways for people to get around. In terms of bigger picture issues, I think commuter rail is essential. I've been working with Judge Yarbrough and Mayor Jaworski in Galveston, and before him Mayor Thomas, on the whole, you know, 45 quarter, the old Galveston Road. That rail line is one that's not used as much as some of the others around the county. HJAC did their review. They found that one to be probably the most cost-effective, the most doable, with a higher number of ridership in terms of any commuter rail line in the county. I support that. I've been working with them on it, and we'll continue to do that. I think for Metro Houston, they got to stay on track, pun intended, and do rail in this region. It's an important connector, support way to get people around. And I think we need to look real closely at what the Free Rail District may be doing to sort of get more of the tracks away from communities and neighborhoods and just sort of build a corridor for all the goods to be transported, but yet not to really impact the neighborhoods. So I think there's a lot of things that can be done, and it's all part of moving forward.
Okay. Dynamo Stadium, which is the deal has been finalized and will go forward, is partly in your precinct. Seemed like that took an awful long time. Can you give me a bit of a glimpse behind the scenes? Why did it take so long for the Dynamo Stadium deal to come together?
Well, I think the Dynamo deal is always been driven by the City of Houston. That was a City of Houston initiative. I don't think that the county was ever looking at being involved, and it wasn't until they frankly went short of cash that Mayor White suggested that, well, maybe the county needs to contribute, and this is how much they should contribute. I think the biggest challenge there was identifying, you know, level of contribution, and if we contributed, what was for return on investment. You've got to remember that for this project, it's no different than a number of groups, number of cities, and number of entities that come to the county for support on many of projects. So we saw this as another project to review, and it took us a while to get through it. For services that were involving TERS funding, and that's very different than any other kind of funding. And all of us have a sort of a general rule at the county that we don't really get involved in TERSes in any cities, because it is cities that initiate TERSes by law. So you kind of have to be invited, and if you're invited, then you certainly want to know what the dance is about and what you get, you know, in return for your dollars. For example, I can tell you that there's a TERS, I think it was in Baytown, where, like for me, for a developer, I always insist that there's going to be an affordable housing component. Or I may make sure that they include, you know, park space. You know, there's certain criteria for involvement in the TERS. So I think we had to work through all those issues to finally get to where we are. And now, frankly, it's in the hands of the negotiators on the TERSes, because I think it involves three TERSes. All those agreements are not complete. We've not even reviewed them. We haven't officially joined all those TERSes. And then, of course, Diamond's got to get their financing in order.
Okay.
But I think it's going to happen.
Okay. Well, it sure looks like it. A lot of people are hopeful about it. The Harris County Sports Authority was in the news recently having some financial issues. Are you concerned about that? What's your take on the current status of the Sports Authority? Do we even need them at this point?
Well, I think the Sports Authority has got some very challenging financial issues. I think their bond status, I think, was just recently lowered to what one would consider junk bond status. That means no one's going to invest. I think it makes it even tougher for them to try to refinance any of those dollars. The big hickey really was not them. It was the insurer that was used. The insurer that was used at the time is gone sort of under. So it wasn't that they managed anything. You know, it's not that they didn't manage something. It's just some of the things that have been going on in Wall Street. So in the end, yes, I'm concerned. We just voted. I think it was $2 million to the Sports Corporation, which is a separate entity, to then in turn help on some of those issues. So anytime we in turn have to take some dollars to give to sort of, you know, be the backup plan, it concerns me, because those are dollars that we could be using somewhere else. And it, to me, it's kind of like, it doesn't really matter if it's hot tax dollars or, you know, property tax dollars or any other dollars. A dollar is a dollar when it comes from taxes, no matter who it is who's paying them. So I'm a little concerned, but I think that we'll get past it.
Judge Emmett has proposed creating an appointed elections commissioner position that would take the elections-related functions away from the tax assessor and the county clerk. What is your opinion of his proposal?
Well, state law has provided it. It's really not his proposal. I mean, state law allows counties to do this, but it's up to commissioner's court. The idea was floated about a year ago, and there wasn't the three votes to get it done, and there was sort of a diverse views on the whole issue. I think right now may not be the right climate to start thinking about creating a new department with another high-paid, you know, department head and additional staff and resources. I mean, we're in the middle of a hiring freeze. We're in the middle of no increases for anybody, to then now turn around to create a whole new department with a whole different set of employees and needed resources. I don't think that's one of those things that's sort of a very neutral. I don't think it's just moving these people from here to here, it's not going to be that easy. So I think we really need to really look at it closely to make sure that there are either some real cost savings, some real efficiencies, and a good check and balance. Because I think the public, the voters, should ultimately be the ones to decide whether or not someone is not handling in the check election properly. So we're going to have to look at, you know, the duties that want to be transferred to make sure that that's not something that really should be something that the voters need to decide, and not us as county commissioners, but an appointed body that works together with the election administrator. Mm-hmm. So we need to, I'm kind of open to it, but I think we need to really look at it more closely.
Okay. County commissioners themselves have an awful lot of autonomy and a decent sized budget, and as Rick Casey in the Chronicle has written, that you guys generally go along with what an individual commissioner wants to do in his or her own precinct. If you want to do something, the other commissioners will usually go along with it, and vice versa. I guess the question I have would be, do you believe philosophically that's a good way for the county to run its business? Do you think that allows for sufficient accountability?
I think there's a good balance. I think when you look at the way that we operate, there really is nobody that knows the precinct and the operations of that precinct better than the commissioner over it. I would be really remiss in trying to second guess what Commissioner Lee or Raddick or Ebersole want to do in their area. I think that the only reason it works well is because we really do respect that. But when it comes to the global issues, you know, the general policy decisions of, you know, the flood control, the toll road, the hospital district, all those other entities that are part of our tax entity families, those are all decisions that we make jointly. I mean, the budget is made jointly. The fiscal policies are jointly. And that's how it works, because it really truly is only about the operations in your area. Everything else is decided by everybody. And I can tell you that sometimes it doesn't work. I mean, I've had one or two items that I've really, really had to work on. I think you saw that when we discussed the what more commonly is known as the I-dive, but it's really whether or not it's a suppression, a barrier, or whether it's a levee system or a wall. It took me almost, I think, 3 different meetings, because I had a commissioner who's not from my area, obviously, who was saying, well, no, I mean, it's, you know, do we really want to have to get into that? You know, what, you know, is that a lot of money they were going to spend? And, you know, there's always some good, healthy arguments. So I think it's good that we respect what that commissioner wants to do, but there's always the opportunity for a commissioner to ask tough questions about it, as is the public at any one of our public sessions.
Okay. Immigration has been a hot issue politically here and around the country. What role does the county play in this? Obviously, the sheriff has a way of checking inmates or arrestees' immigration status. Is the county doing what it should be doing?
Well, you know, I know everybody says it, but it's reality. I mean, this is a function for the federal government, and it is the federal government who is charged with the responsibility for immigration policy. And frankly, right now, the county has very, very little, if any, role. The only area that we see any policy decision has been on the implementation of the 287G program, which is the immigration hold on prisoners that are coming into the jail. The sheriff wanted to do that. It was started by Sheriff Tommy Thomas. It was continued by Sheriff Adrian Garcia. I voted against it both times. I just don't think that our local sheriff's department jailers should be put in a role of being immigration officers. If the federal government wants them to do that, well, then they should pay for it. I don't think our local tax dollars should be used in that manner. We've got very challenging issues with our overcrowding issues in the jail. We're always under the gun to meet, be in compliance with a number of different rules, either by the state Commission on Jail Standards or someone else. I think it's over $1 million that we spend on that project that we don't get reimbursed for. I think those dollars could be put, frankly, to better use doing that, because if you look at the number of people that get holds placed on them, yes, there are some that are very serious offenders, but there's a lot of them that are not serious or they're not heinous. And it really should be the job of the federal government, and they should reimburse us if we do the work, and they're not.
Okay. One of the stories this year in politics is the enthusiasm gap between Republicans and Democrats about who's more interested in voting. As you are campaigning for re-election, do you see this in your precinct, and if so, how do you deal with it?
You know, I think there's right now there just doesn't seem to be any enthusiasm by anybody. I had this conversation, I guess, over the weekend with, I was home for a family wedding, and they said, well, how is it going? And I said, well, you kick it off Labor Day, but I really just don't see it. It's not on the radar. I don't think anybody's thinking about the election except the candidates. I think until they start seeing some activity, more activity on the airwaves, to start receiving more mail, I don't think people are that focused on the election right now. They're more focused on their jobs, are looking for jobs. They're concerned about health care. They're concerned about their quality of life. They just want to be able to just survive right now. So I think all candidates, all parties, have a real challenge ahead of them the next 42 days.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November 2nd, why should they vote for you to be elected to a third term?
Well, I think if you check with a lot of folks in our area, you'll find that they tell you that I listen, that I work hard, and that I've been there to get the job done and have been delivering the services. We have a very strong record of a lot of projects and a lot of things that we brought to our community, whether it's helping veterans to get to the VA hospital, whether it's seniors and making sure they've got food on the table, or young people to make sure they've got after-school programs, or just all the roads and parks and facilities that we've been able to bring to East Harris County. So I think if you look at everything that we've been able to build, I don't think this is the time to make changes. I think it's the time to keep moving forward and moving forward with someone that's been there for them, fighting for all our working families in East Harris County. So hopefully they'll get interested in the race and check the record, and we'll agree with our campaign that we're there to stand by them, and we're ready to continue doing the work.
County Commissioner Sylvia Garcia, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Sure, thank you.